Namaste and blessings. Welcome back to Meditative Living. Sadgurunath Maharaj Kije. This is your host, Swami Shivananda Giri. Thank you. If you happen to be listening live right now and you've been sitting all this time waiting for the show to start, thank you very, very much for waiting. For those who are listening in the archive, you know, this won't make any sense at all. We are on the path of exploration through the authoritative Guru Gita of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj, who happens to be this Swami's guru. Now, let's just, if this is your first time in this particular text, you need to go back on www.type1radio.com. That's a digit one, not the word. And start with Guru Gita number one. Because at this point where we're at, things will not make sense. So, let us pick up right away without any further setup. Let's begin with verse number 112. Shiva says to Parvati, one should meditate on the Guru as seated on a throne in the lotus of the heart in the head, emanating the moonlight which bestows all bliss and fulfills all desires. The commentary. In the Chittakasha Gita, Bhagwan Nityananda speaks frequently of the heart space in the head. He specifies that when he uses the word heart, He is neither referring to the physical organ that pumps blood throughout the body, nor the heart chakra, the anahata. The heart, he tells us, is consciousness. Consciousness is the hub from which all the phenomenon of this vast universe originates. Thus, it is the heart of all. Consciousness isn't limited to any one place or any particular body part. Everything, every place is only consciousness. Every part of the body is only consciousness. The language used here is indicating something of the process that occurs in the human body as the consciousness of the individual is unfolding to become the all-encompassing consciousness absolute. Namely, this. When the awakened Kundalini Shakti becomes established in the crown chakra, known as the Sahasrara, which is located in the top of the head, one becomes able to perceive consciousness, the big ass self, as it really is. This is the culmination of the seeker's spiritual practice. It is in this sense that the heart or consciousness itself is located in the head. Kindly allow this, Swami, to specify and expand a bit here. There are numerous phenomena that occur as we are seeking to establish stability of energies, primarily the Kundalini Shakti, in the crown chakra. Simply visiting it and then falling back out of it is not the goal. Some people, when they hit this, they stick. Most do not. Most will get some sort of a glimpse of what it is like to be in this peak, but then it goes away and you're right back to where you were before. So, although this much talked about energetic event is possible, the just bare bones reality of it is most of us who even come close will be in it, out of it, in it, out of it, in it, over and over and over. The number of times is completely irrelevant. If you hit it and stick, well, good for you. But that's not how it is most of the time. You'll have some samadhi experience, but then it goes away. And that is not enlightenment. That is an experience, but it is not enlightenment. It is nowhere near liberation. Back to the commentary here. When the mind is pure and unclouded, it clearly reflects the light of consciousness. The moon, who reflects the light of the sun is a metaphor that is often used to describe this dynamic. Although there are two bodies involved, the light or consciousness is one and the same between source and individual. Just as the sun's light in our solar system is the same, although you can see the sun in the sky, and then later you will see the moon in the sky. The moon gives off no light at all of its own. It only reflects the sunlight to the earth. When the light of consciousness is able to shine forth uninhibited from the individual, that individual is a sadguru or a true guru. Now, this can be spelled S-A-D-G-U-R-U, or it can be spelled S-A-T-G-U-R-U. G-U-R-U. That means true guru. It is that light of consciousness that is the bestower of all bliss. It has the power to fulfill anything. Okay, now we're going to roll through verses 113 through 116. Shiva says to Parvati, adorned in white clothes and pure white flowers, the two-eyed guru is seated with the divine Shakti to the left. With a beautiful smile, he fully bestows her grace. Knower of the self, he is of the nature of knowledge, pleasant and full of happiness. He is the master of all yogis. He is the doctor to the disease of samsara. To that guru, I always bow. I salute all those gurus who have shown the way to one's blissful self and who have given us the antidote to the terrible poison of attachment. I salute the guru in whom five powers always shine forth. These are the powers of creation, sustenance, dissolution, restriction, and grace. The commentary. Every power of these five powers is like a pane of colored glass through which the light of the absolute shines and assumes the form of the sparkling variegations of the manifest universe. The guru, who is Shiva, creates, sustains, and dissolves his creation at will. He enters into it by willingly accepting limitation. Limitation being another translation for where the word restriction was used, which Shiva does playfully for the sake of experiencing his own nature. If he did not do this, his nature would remain unmanifest. He sheds his entanglement in limitation, resuming the original fullness as Shiva. When Guru bestows the power of grace upon the apparently individual aspect of Shiva, the Jiva, which is, in Christian terminology, the soul, the individual spark of the divine under limitation. Working in the world of manifest existence, the Guru blesses the righteous and punishes the wicked by means of his power of restriction. In illustrating this facet of what is meant by these words, our translator, Acharya Padma Najendra, related that many sages, like Sri Krishna, Vishvamitra, Vashista, and others, used this power. They cursed many and killed many, sometimes even gods themselves, for the good of humanity. There were infamous demons or rakshasas like Ravana from the Ramayana, Indrajit, Hiranyaksha, etc., who also had this power, but they abused it. Moving on to verse 117. Shiva says to Parvati, "The fire of the Guru's lotus feet is capable of burning away the entire forest of samsara. The cool glow of the moon, or the nectar of self-realization, is found in the crown of his head." Number 118, Shiva said, "The letters A, Ka, and Pa form the three lines of a triangle within the sphere of the thousand-petaled lotus. On either side are Ham and Sa. Remember the Guru in its center." Let's go ahead and do the break song here, Sonic. It's rather a long commentary coming up and quite involved. So let's do the break song here. And we'll be back with the commentary for verse 118 of the authoritative Guru Gita here on Meditative Living. Shivaya. Namaste and blessings. Welcome back to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri. And we are making our way through the text of the authoritative Guru Gita. Now, let us launch into the commentary on verse 118. Ah, ka, and pa are letters found in the Sanskrit alphabet. Each of these individual letters is also representative of a category that can be applied to the alphabet. A represents all of the vowels. Ka represents a particular grouping of the consonants. And pa represents a second grouping of the consonants. Thus, A, Ka, and Pa. Presented in this way, constitute a triadic or three-part representation of the entire Sanskrit alphabet. The Sanskrit alphabet, in its turn, is said to represent everything in existence, from the most subtle Shiva to the grossest, densest, slowest, hardest worldly manifestations. The prevailing sentiment in tantric mysticism, and in fact, Indian mysticism in general, is that language itself is the manifesting potential of the absolute Shiva. Matrika, the alphabet, is the Shakti or power of Shiva, the goddess. In this model, the wheel of energies, the Shakti Chakra, which goes on to differentiate into every level of consciousness and everything in every level of consciousness, is the totality of language. Furthermore, this concept isn't limited to Indian mysticism. In fact, this concept is very perfectly and succinctly elaborated in the Holy Bible. The book of John, chapter 1, verse 1, states, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Although people often tend to think of word as being preceded by thought, our mystics tell us that the word, or shabda, aka the sphere of transcendent speech, or vak, precipitates both thought and gross speech that takes place here on the physical level. His powers of speech are always ready to obscure his nature, as no mental representation can arise unpenetrated by speech. The overarching implication here is that there is an archetypal body of phonemes or sounds, from which everything else is manifest. It is only by merit of the mind's ability to reflect a portion of this potency that individuals are able to represent their experience in terms of thought. It is from vak, or the transcendent realm of speech, that the very inspiration to communicate in any language is drawn in the first place. Moreover, it is this power of speech that causes Shiva to forget his own true nature and become bound to the idea of existence only as the limited individual, or Jiva. This, Shiva's power of action residing in the fettered soul, binds it. But, rightly understood, Shakti, who, on the one hand, is the potency of the power of obscuring, becomes the driving force behind the power of grace instead. When its true nature is understood and it is set on its own path, this power bestows the fruits of yoga. For example, the tendency of an individual is to generate self-talk that promotes the idea of its own individuality, the notion of I as distinct from an other, which is the root cause of suffering. Self-talk like this, for instance. "Oh my God! I can't believe she said that to me. And in front of all those other people, I am so humiliated." On the other hand, thoughts that perpetuate and reinforce the contraction of consciousness, like that one just mentioned, can be counterbalanced and weakened by mantra. Ideally, a mantra that has been given by Guru. Thus, partaking of the Guru's power of grace. Self-inquiry is another way of utilizing language to promote the expansion of consciousness. Self-inquiry can be understood to be any effort directed toward creating the habit of holistic thinking, thereby removing the habit of divisive thinking. Incidentally, many mantras are attributed meanings that also promote self-inquiry. Shivaham is said to be translated as I am Shiva. Tat Tvam Asi means thou art that. Soham simply means I am, or I am that I am. However, the real power of mantra lies not in ideas that are attributed to it, but in its ability to harness the primal power of transcendental speech toward the end of consciousness expansion. Mantra, when given by a guru or their representative, is the very form of grace itself. Now that this context has been provided, let's revisit the terms in which the word is invoked in this verse and unpack the implications contained therein. As already stated, ah, ka, and ta are a triadic or three-part representation of the entire Sanskrit alphabet, which, by the way, has 52 characters or letters. This method of categorization is indicative of Srividya, a Shakta, or goddess-centric branch of Tantra. Kindly allow this Swami to add here. The word Tantra. Here in the West, many times, if someone says Tantra, someone else is thinking sex because of tantric sex, stuff like that. No. It can be utilized in that way, but that is not the essence of the meaning. Tantra is simply infusing the profane, the mundane, the worldly with divine potential. That's what Tantra is. All tantric practices, regardless how debased, offensive, or strange they may seem, are the individual practitioner's attempt to mix the divine with the manifest into one thing, so they are no longer two. At this point, okay, now here we're going to go into where in the book here there are diagrams and photographs. Well, on radio, that doesn't work so good. So, I'm going to do my best to describe in a way that your mind might be able to catch what is being talked about here. At this point, we must introduce the diagram known as the Sri Yantra, which is highly revered within Tantra as a whole and by Sri Vidya, remember the goddess-centered aspect of Hinduism, in particular. As you can see, well, or not, the innermost feature of the Sri Yantra is a series of interwoven triangles drawn around a dot. The dot is known as the bindu, or the point. In Sri Vidya, each of these triangles is representative of a tattva. A tattva is an archetypal principle that underlies the very fabric of existence in this universe and beyond. The letters of the Sanskrit alphabet also correspond to these tattvas, again, represented by triangles. Now, there are both two-dimensional versions of Sri Yantra, which you would see like as a painting or a wall hanging, something of that nature. There is also three-dimensional representations, which depict the yantra kind of like a mountain. Directly beneath the highest and most compact triangle is the bindu, or the point. That's in the center at the peak. The point represents Shiva, the highest and innermost triangle. Remember, there's a dot in the middle and then a series of interwoven triangles becoming larger in size. The point, the bindu, represents Shiva. And then the highest and innermost triangle represents Shakti in her entirety. Her three sides are a trifold representation of the entirety of the sound inherent in the emanation of differentiated existence. Thus, she is a triangle whose three sides are named A, Ka, and Pa. At a lower, more differentiated tier of existence is prana, the subtle life force that animates everything, whether it be a growing plant, whether it's an insect, an animal, or a human body. The swan, or hamsa, is considered symbolic of the movement of prana throughout the body's system of subtle nerves, the nadis. This prana, or energetic breath, is the ham and sa, which are found on either side of the sahasrara, the crown chakra. In other words, prana is graphically represented on the Sri Yantra as being beneath the tier of the triangle and also surrounding. In summary, verse 118 of the Guru Gita urges the seeker to remember the Guru, who is the Self, who is Shiva, whose seat is in the center of the Sahasrara, or the crown chakra. The seeker is prompted to remember that Guru, who is surrounded by the wheel of powers, the Shakti chakra, which is not different from himself. This is the triangle composed of Ah, Ka, and Pa. The word or speech, that is the transcendental, prior to vibrational frequency of any range. Or also known as the goddess, the totality of the archetypal forces that conspire to form this universe and more. Arising from either side of the thousand-petaled lotus, which is the seat of this wonder, are the petals, Ham and Sa, the very life breath of the individual. To remember this is to remember, I am the Lord who playfully propels the machine of the wheel of energy. My nature is pure, and I hold the position of the Lord of the Wheel of Energies. It is in me alone that all things manifest, as do jars and other objects. Everything extends out of me, as does the wonderful diversity of dreams from one who sleeps. Verse 119. Shiva says to Parvati, I salute the Guru who is Brahman only. He is pure, immaculate, formless, unattached, and is always established in bliss and knowledge. The commentary. The Guru knows and is the I Am prior to the body-mind complex, prior to the existence of the universe. This is the immaculate, supreme Brahman or consciousness absolute. It is existence before name and form, even though all names and forms proceed from that. Even in this state of attributelessness, Brahman remains fully self-aware. In Kashmir Shaivite terms, this reflective awareness, intrinsic to consciousness absolute, is technically known as Vimarsha, another quality intrinsic to consciousness absolute is bliss. The Guru simultaneously is Brahman and the individual who partakes of the transcendent knowledge, or jnani, and bliss. Another of Brahman's attributes is that of perfect fullness, completeness. The Guru who knows the Self understands, I am perfect. This refers to and keeps them constantly established in this perfect completeness. So, being established in that way, a true guru, a satguru, has no need to seek anything or flinch from anything. The true guru is ever content to abide in the bliss of the self, which is utterly perfect and complete at all times. Kindly allow this, Swami, to expound on this a bit. This Swami has had the great fortune of experiencing directly this perfect fullness, this completeness. And the words that would seem to describe this indescribable thing are that it was the presence of all potential, but nothing yet manifest. Nothing yet individuated, but everything just ready to go, to be, to do, just full. Nothing could be taken away, nothing could be added. Now, of course, at the time that this happened, this Swami did not understand even how to talk about it, let alone what it was. But thankfully, by Guru's grace, such things have become understandable. And this Swami has no expectation for you to fully understand it until you directly experience it. Because it's not something for the mind. This is outside the limits of time and space completely. Time and space have not yet come into being in that, from that. And it's always like that. Despite the fact you and this Swami and everyone listening are experiencing time and space, that doesn't change. Yeah, it's kind of weird, but that's how it is. And that's how it works. Sonic, let's go ahead and wrap her up for today. We'll kick off next week with another verse. Namaste and blessings. Om Namo Narayana. Sadgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai.